If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Hello, you're listening to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
Hello, I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I was going to start the show by imploring all of our viewers that write for media organizations to make sure that our show is in their best of 2016 lists, but I'm not going to do that because they already know. I want to tell you about a very funny conversation I had with my wife this week.
Okay, so we're skipping the first part. We're going straight into the second part.
Yeah, this is like, we're not doing that Marin Open. We're doing this Marin Open.
Okay.
So my wife, bless her heart, has never seen a frame of Star Trek The Next Generation, the subject of our podcast here. And I tweeted a little bit of this, but I wanted, you know, most people don't follow me on Twitter, and for good reason.
Oh, those people have made a huge mistake.
We were like doing the quaint old thing of channel surfing the other day, and we flicked past an episode of Frasier that was on in reruns, and Patrick Stewart was a cameo character on this episode, and she just goes, "Data!" Sincerely.
Oh no.
And I said, that's actually Captain Picard. And she's like, "Well, who are the characters on that show? There's Data, there's Geordi, there's Shimoda."
She's right about all those. Those are characters.
And I didn't know how to break it to her that Shimoda was only on one episode. She's like, "You talk about him all the time."
You didn't tell her the truth, did you?
I did, because I didn't want her to, like, I mean, as embarrassing as this whole thing has been for her, I don't want her to get further embarrassed.
Wow. I mean, I would hate for her to, well, I guess I would hate for her to watch the show and be disappointed that there wasn't as much Shimoda as she was expecting.
Yeah.
But also, I love the idea of her watching episode after episode expecting for him to come back.
Did you make this guy up? So that was amusing. And then we, you know, watched some, I don't know, somebody cooking something on TV for a little while. And she says, "What's the ship called again? It's not the Death Star. That's in Star Wars, right?" And I go, "No, it's not the Death Star." And she's like, "Wait, don't tell me." And I was like, "All right." She's like, "It ends in an R, right?" And I said, "No, I don't, what?" She said, "Voyager? Explorer?" She wound up guessing entrepreneur, which I think is hilarious.
I think, just to jump in here real quickly, like, I want to interrupt the groans of 10,000 nerds out there by saying that I've met Rachel several times before. She is a smart and capable and beautiful person through and through.
Yeah.
But one of the ways that she is not a genius just might be having to do with Star Trek and tangentially like a little bit of the pop culture that we exist in.
Yeah, I mean, she's not vastly younger than me, but she's, you know, enough younger than you that you probably didn't have any childhood shows in common.
I just sort of, like, because we recently spent a couple days together when we were all visiting together in California. Like, I got the feeling that she just might have been cooler than me, like, in her growing up. And that could account for the detachment that I think a lot of less than cool people have and use to form relationships with each other. Like,
yeah,
like this is the currency, the nerd currency that you share with someone to become friends. And if you're cool, you don't necessarily, you've got rubles or something. You've got a different currency to spread around socially.
Yeah, so she didn't spend any part of her childhood knowing things about an imaginary universe.
Right.
And that, like, wouldn't have helped her even if she had.
Yeah, she doesn't need that.
I fucking did.
Yeah, like two crutches that connect to my forearms. I needed this.
Well, anyways, the other night we were out to see a film, and we walked past the Barclays Center in downtown Brooklyn, the new basketball arena, and
one that looks all rusty.
She goes, "God, that thing looks so futuristic. That thing looks like The Entrepreneur." I am like 60% sure that she thinks that the Enterprise is actually called The Entrepreneur. There's a chance that she's like gaslighting me, and she knows full well. But
well, on the chance that she may be listening, I hope she never stops that. That is hilarious. The Entrepreneur D.
Yeah. This isn't Kirk's Entrepreneur. Now Picard is in charge.
Oh wow. It's entrepreneur is a French word, isn't it?
Sure.
To go with its French captain.
Well, and it also, like, it's not far off the mark, right? Like, enterprise is like a word that connotes business and success, you know? So like there's something kind of amazing about that she guessed entrepreneur.
The IPO alone will be enough to buy the ship.
Well, what do you say we get into our episode, Adam?
These are the voyages, Ben, of the Starship Entrepreneur. It's season 4, episode 18, Identity Crisis.
This is a kind of a fun cold open. It's a video playback of some Starfleet officers, most of whom we don't know, but Geordi is in there. And they're exploring a planet, and Geordi is in a red shirt in this. And then we kind of, they're like, I don't know what they're looking for. They're looking for missing colonists or something. And the camera pulls back, and it turns out we've been watching this on a monitor in the observation lounge on the Enterprise, and we are in a McLaughlin group, and we didn't even know it.
Issue one.
It's they're sort of watching a CSI episode, aren't they?
Like, yeah,
they're doing some forensic evidence investigation.
Mm-hmm. They're watching an episode of another Star Trek show.
Yeah, they do this all the time.
Yeah, that's how you get caught up. So the backstory that we quickly come to know is that this officer who's giving the presentation, Lieutenant Commander Susanna Layton,
yeah,
am I saying that right? Layton is looking into the disappearance of every single other person that is in this video, aside from her and Geordi, and they've all jaked shuttlecrafts and headed back to this planet that that this video was taken on, which is Tarkanan 3. Tarkanan 3? Probably Tarkanan.
Yeah, let's go with that.
So there's a lot of shuttlecrafts getting jaked in this episode, like maybe more than ever.
Yeah, they're running out of previas, Ben.
Yeah, well, fortunately, these aren't all coming from the Enterprise. Some of them are coming from other ships or star bases or whatever. But yeah, like these offices are like, you know, like salmon returning to the headwaters of this mystery and disappearing in the process.
This is going to be the end of the road for a lot of salmon.
That's a great way to describe it.
Thanks, Adam. That's why I get the big bucks.
There's a cozy familiarity between this Lieutenant Commander Layton and Geordi, which leads me to believe that he has not stalked her before or yet, because like they have a totally great friendship going, and she is not creeped out by him at all. It made me feel happy that Geordi could have something like this and not fuck it up.
It's a weird episode because I think that if Galaxy's Child had not come so recently in the show order, I think that this would be an episode about a healthy relationship that Geordi has with a woman.
Yeah.
But every interaction, I feel, is colored by what we just saw. And like at one point, she's like losing her mind and legitimately needs to be restrained, and he restrains her.
Where are you going? Suzanne.
Stay away.
Suze.
The Porsche Enterprise, medical emergency, 2 to 6 bay.
And it's like very upsetting. It's totally gross and weird.
I think there are a couple of powers at work here. There is the headcanon that we've come up with for Geordi that may or may not be reasonable and true. But also, I think the binge works against our feelings about Geordi here, because season 4 is definitely the season of Geordi.
Yeah.
And we've gotten several episodes just in this season alone that we've watched fairly close together that paints a pretty disturbing picture of our friend Geordi LaForge.
Yeah. Seriously. Well, anyways, one of the missing shuttlecraft is entering Tarkanan airspace, and the Enterprise shows up just in time to not be able to do anything about it. And this is like a total mirror of when Jake stole the shuttle. Like Picard is trying to talk. I think it's Lieutenant Hickman that's trying to land it through, you know, entering the atmosphere safely. And I guess the Enterprise is too far away for transporter or tractor beaming, and so he's just going to try and talk him through it, but Lieutenant Hickman is non-responsive, and the shuttlecraft hits the atmosphere at too steep an angle.
Lieutenant Hickman, you must do what I tell you. Reduce your velocity and bring your craft to a positive pitch of 20 degrees, now!
The shuttle is entering the lower ionosphere, sir.
Pops. He dead.
There goes another Previa.
Oh man. We gotta do something about these Previas getting jacked. Maybe the thing to do is like put like a primer door panel on all of the Previas so they're like a little bit less desirable.
We have LoJack right now, Ben. Did they decide at some point to just get rid of that technology?
This is also a ship that got spotted by like a transport vessel on its way. Like that, it's like, just go get it. What do you mean it's running away? Just go fucking get it. You have starships.
Oh man. Yeah, and this Hickman guy is not responding to any hails at all. Picard is just getting more and more urgent with his messaging. He's like, pull up, man. Hickman, you're blowing it here.
So they watch this guy buy the farm, and they scan the surface, and there's two more Previas down there. And they're like, well, at least this isn't a total loss. We can go get those other Previas.
Even so if they're salvage title, I think we can get some money out of them.
Yeah, we'll put them in the penny saver. We'll get some money. uh, they beam down and they put a search party together and they're looking for the other Starfleet guys that are missing. They can't find them, but they do find some like wadded up and muddy uniforms.
And some three-toe footprints.
Yeah.
Pretty creepy shit.
Yeah. A real bummer. That's $6,000 worth of uniform that is totally ruined. And, you know, not to mention the fact that lobster claws are now being heavily foreshadowed.
I mean, I mentioned the season of Geordi being season 4, but I might want to rewrite that as the season of lobster hands. It's a real leitmotif.
Yeah, I think we were talking about the idea that it could potentially be the lobster claw box set, but I don't know that we need to do that. We can just call it lobster claw season.
Yeah, it truly is. It's you know how every season of a long-running show has a different picture on the season box, but usually it's like the main character and then an ancillary character. This one's definitely Picard and a hand with three fingers on it.
Yeah, yeah. That poster paints itself, baby.
What's your favorite season, Ben?
I don't know. Season 4 is pretty good. I don't know if I'm going to be able to say that definitively until we're done, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to choose.
Yeah, I mean it's made the best case for itself so far. Wouldn't you say?
How would it make that case?
By having less shitty episodes than other seasons.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, like the metric has become the lack of bad episodes versus, I think, the myriad great episodes. I don't feel like season 4 has got a ton of great episodes in it. Its lows are just less low than other seasons so far.
Yeah, it's less miserable to sit through.
Oh man, that's a sticker that should go on the box.
Now with 30% less misery.
Benjamin R. Harrison of the Greatest Generation podcast says. You're a regular Leonard Maltin.
You're not the first person to say that, Adam. Well,
does Rachel say that too?
She wouldn't know who Leonard Maltin is. Come on.
Yeah, she'd think that was Gene Shalit.
Right. Yeah. the away team comes back with some non-definitive evidence that the other two people are down there on the planet, but it's a mystery, and this is a fun mystery episode where a lot of, you know, technologically appropriate mystery solving goes on, and part of the investigation lands on the doctor who finds skin cells on the uniforms.
Yeah,
and I guess she also finds them in Layton's body, and the doctor and Data are looking to figure out what species this is that has three toes and this weird type of skin cells. Layton and Geordi are working together on trying to figure out like what it is that is drawing people back to this planet. What's flipping a switch in their head that says like, I got to get back to that planet. And the captain is like, There's something going up on this planet, so nobody's going down there until we figure that out. And it's not long before Layton starts kind of trying to make excuses for getting back down there. You know, she's like, we can't do our investigation from up here. The fucking answers are on the surface, man.
This the tension is being raised through both her insistence to go down and sort of an invisible clock, right?
Yeah.
Many years have passed between when the away team was on this planet for the first time and their return. And so Layton and Geordi are sort of wondering when that buzzer is going to go off in their heads. Like, this happens to everyone. Eventually, my number's up. When's right. it going to happen? And yeah. So the urgency is really being spurred here. And it isn't long before Layton starts displaying these symptoms.
Right. And it's also got Data pretty worked up. There's a pretty bad scene where the doctor asks Data if he's like anxious about the situation, and Data has to re-explain that he's an android and doesn't have emotions.
You're worried about Geordi, aren't you?
I am an android. It is not possible
for you to feel anxiety.
I really didn't like that scene. It was a total turn to camera. Like, for those of you who haven't watched every episode of Star Trek The Next Generation,
right?
I should tell you that...
Yeah, it's like he said, have you been watching, Doctor? Because we've been over this.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad.
She is very condescending, too, I feel like, in a way that rubs me the wrong way, too.
Yeah. Data kind of redeems himself later, though, because Geordi is, like, doing some work in the Shimoda Memorial Corner, and Data just comes up behind him and, like, totally spooks Geordi.
Geordi, may I inquire how your investigation is proceeding?
And it's, like, a funny little moment that, like, I mean, it plays a little bit into what's going on, but not even that much, and was really charming, I thought.
I really love how much action the Shimoda Corner has been getting this season.
Totally.
Feels like it is a strong third set on this show now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in there.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that which longer nurse the disease. Tell me
more, you'll have to go again. So Susanna, the lieutenant commander there that's helping them, is getting more and more anxious, and eventually... She like bails out and collapses, and Geordi runs over, and I guess he's probably checking for a nubbin on the back of her neck just to be sure.
Yeah, you gotta do that.
You just did, like, I bet in Starfleet it's fairly standard protocol to just do a nubbin check every, you know, 5 or 6 hours on everybody in your section.
I'm sure for a while they considered dropping the collar. Like dropping that Mandarin collar into maybe
just put a little
a V
notch
situation.
In the back.
Yeah.
A back V.
Yeah.
A deep back V.
Yeah.
I like that.
They scrapped that idea. A few of the crewmen with back hair protested in a pretty big way.
Yeah. Well, Susanna, in lieu of a nubbin, has weird blue veins, and her hands have gone lobstery.
Doctor, her hands have gone full lobster.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, it,
That's a really, like, that is like a D-minus Zoidberg. That sucked. Sorry.
It's the best Zoidberg you've got under the circumstances. Sometimes you don't get the Zoidberg you want. You get the Zoidberg you need.
Yeah. That's the Zoidberg we deserve right now.
And so we must hunt Zoidberg, because he can take it.
Uh-oh. Anyways, the investigation has to continue, but Susanna is now confined to Six Bay, and she's worsening pretty quickly. She goes from being veiny to, like, having loaf all over her face and veins all over her body. Eventually, like, they discover that she's got some kind of weird bioluminescence in her skin. If you shine a flashlight at her, her skin will glow for a little while. It's not looking good, and everything that the doctor is doing to try and slow this down is apparently having no effect.
And Geordi is sort of seeing his future here. He's like, oh my God, this is terrible. It's going to happen to me. This happened to one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And Picard and Beverly are like, look, man, I'm thinking we should probably confine you to the Six Bay so we can get our arms around this thing. And Geordi has a pretty great scene here with the two of them. He's like,
what would you do, Captain? Would you sit it out here in Six Bay or try to learn what it is that's got you? Maybe stop it.
I would prefer to stay out of Six Bay and go work on the problem. And Picard finds this is a pretty sensible plea. So they let Geordi go. This doesn't exactly forgive everything up until now, though, which is a pattern of jaking shuttlecrafts and taking control of ships by the people who are on this planet, who are
right.
who are who are who are morphizing.
It would be really fun if they just cut to a scene of Worf in the shuttle bay putting clubs on the steering wheels of all the Previas.
That's just it, Ben. They do nothing to prevent what they know is coming. Like, Geordi is like, you know, you could always just check up on me every once in a while to make sure I'm still on the ship. Even though a couple of episodes ago, Beverly is like, has the computer audibly say what Picard's medical condition is, like, right, second by second. Like, they could do a little bit more, but they don't.
Nope. Wouldn't move the narrative forward, would it, Adam?
No, it sure wouldn't.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
This is, like, one of my favorite sequences, maybe in the whole of Star Trek, because it's him solving a mystery with really cool tools.
Yeah.
And it's, so he goes back and he's like looking at the surveillance footage that they have been looking at the entire time, and he notices this weird shadow that he can't explain in the shot. And this is like super well done, because it's in there for sure. It's a weird shadow, but it's not clear what's casting it, and they do a good job of making it look real and look like something that's subtle that you wouldn't see the first time. That's always a really hard balance to strike in production. Like, yeah, something that a character has to notice later after we've already seen it a bunch of times, it's either going to be like embarrassingly obvious or like incredibly obscure, but yeah, not like the perfect amount of subtlety. And I think they really nail this. But he goes to Holodeck 3 and he like recreates the scene. He really like fully Leah Brahms it up.
Is his instinct to create ways to solve problems in the holodeck a violation of his parole, though?
Well, it definitely made me rethink about that, which was like not helping the fact that otherwise this would have been just like a pretty like fine, okay, healthy interaction he was having with the Susanna character.
Yeah. Just changes, but anyways, everything.
Yeah, it just changes everything. It colors the whole, like, everything he does from now on. But yeah, so what he does is, like, he, you know, starts eliminating characters, and eventually he discovers that this shadow is still there with all of the people in the shot missing, and extrapolating that the thing casting it might be the same height as him, he has the computer make a, you know, its best guess at a 3D representation of what that thing would be. And it's like this spooky gray character. Like, it's like not even a character. It's like the outline of a body in three-dimensional space that appears in the middle of this scene. And it becomes clear that there was an invisible alien there when they were down on that planet 5 years ago.
Kind of looks like a broken lava lamp. It's really creepy. It's effectively, yeah, creepy, for sure.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, this episode, it takes some good lessons from the movie Alien. Like, there's all this kind of body horror thematic stuff happening where the thing that is the threat is already inside them.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
also
the time bomb story.
But also, it's such a cool metaphor for disappearance. You know, the characters are disappearing. They're worried about disappearing, and these creatures that they are turning into actually disappear. Like, it's really fun. It's really like, it's like cool writing that doesn't have a lot of shitty holes in it, which is nice for a change.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. So, so yeah, like this discovery comes like basically not soon enough, because Geordi pitches over and they like cut to back of neck, and he has also developed the blue veins, and then he lifts up his hand. He gone lobster as well, Adam.
Oh God, I'm coming down.
The lobster is spread. This is where the big payoff for their terrible security apparatus comes, though.
Yeah.
Because we cut back to Six Bay, and Beverly's slowly making breakthroughs about what's happening to Susanna on the biobed. They've wheeled over a bunch of gear to help figure it out, including a clip show device.
I totally wrote down clip show device in my notes. That's really funny.
Like, in case they have to go to clip show, they've got that at the ready. I think that's important.
Oh, actually, I called it clip show rig. Excuse me. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I love that was like in a corner, in one of the hangars on the Paramount lot. They just like, hey, we're doing some medical stuff in this episode. Why don't we get that clip show thing over here?
Look, guys, that took two, maybe 3 hours to make. So we're not just going to throw that away.
They've pretty much reversed the thing. And they're like, this is great. Let's get Geordi in here.
Right.
We'll do the same thing to him. And we'll be on our way. And they start trying to radio him up. No answer. The last place he was, as far as the ship is concerned, is in the holodeck, and there's no transporter record, and there's no jaking been reported. So
Picard's like, this is very exciting. This is what we were expecting by not keeping an eye on Geordi the entire time.
Yeah.
Very good.
and the doctor's
extraordinary.
Like, maybe not. It's not that there's something wrong with Geordi, but maybe there's something wrong with the universe. And everybody's like, shut up, doctor. So they send a Dustbuster Club to the holodeck, and they fan out and start a search, which is the dumbest way to look for something in the holodeck.
Like, it occurs to me that the Dustbuster Club is a great name to give this group because they're always cleaning up the messes of the plot. Like, if they had just acted sensibly 20 minutes ago, there would be no need.
Yeah. Well, they don't take the step of turning off the holodeck and then seeing what is left. They just walk in there and they're like, well, we'll have to search behind all these trees and brush and whatnot.
You search the structure. I will take the perimeter.
It could take hours.
They, as they're looking, presumably invisible Geordi slips out because not long after, the doors open in the transporter room and Predator invisibility mode Geordi runs in, beats up the transporter operator and initiates a transport, beaming himself down to Tarkanan 3.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of a look, I think we've been very complimentary about LeVar Burton's body up until now, so I don't want this to come out as super cruel, but it's sort of a tubby Predator situation running into that transporter room, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like sort of Grimace Predator. He's very pear-shaped.
Yeah, maybe they put the green screen suit on over the uniform, so it's like a little bunchier than you would want it to be.
Hey, is this okay? I feel like it's really bunching on the sides. No, LeVar, it's cool. Like, we're just going to comp it out. It's fine.
You're going to be invisible, dude.
No time for vanity. We got to get you on set.
They got to go down to the planet and find him now, and they're like, Data, can you rig up a way for us to see him in the dark? Because he's going to be invisible. And Data's like, yeah, I can probably put a UV filter on a flashlight. And so they cut to this really weird scene in engineering where Data is in, like, almost weirdly deliberate slow motion putting pieces together in this flashlight. It's like we know that he can do isolinear chip reorganization at turbo speed, and he's like gingerly looking through this UV lens as though to check it for dust and scratches. It's like, well, just put it together, man. Like how hard is it to put a filter on a fucking flashlight? And they're like, Data, how much longer is this gonna take? And he's like, oh, it's gonna take 2 minutes.
It's also a thing that's a little too transparent from the prop department. Like, it combines two different tools that we saw earlier on in the episode.
Yeah.
Like, we get close-ups on these flashlights several times in the opening scene, and then we just get that combo with sort of a stick, like a handheld stick later on.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they had come up with something new for this scene, but they didn't.
Would have been better.
Yeah.
But they go down there, and the flashlight works. Like, they're, you know, initially they're like, is anybody even here? But they start, you know, panning around with the flashlight, and they find a whole bunch of these hobbling husky aliens.
Susanna's helping, and she's not holding one of these lights. She seems to have some sort of mental connection to these other creatures. Like she's sort of like half recovered, but not recovered all the way. So she's got her link somehow to them.
Yeah, and I guess like in kind of going through it, she's come to understand that this is the way that this species reproduces. It kind of turns adult members of other species into them by inserting this incredibly hard to detect virus into them.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like what the Borg do, except for some reason worth studying instead of destroying.
Yeah. Well, and also, unlike the Borgs, these aliens seem content once that's accomplished to like hang out in like a campsite. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just singing songs by the campfire, heating up some cocoa. They're pretty chill for assimilating aliens.
Playing some three-string guitar.
Yeah.
Making some very simple to make gloves with three fingers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an easy knitting project, even if you only have three fingers to do it with. So with some tender coaxing, Susanna is able to convince fully alienized Geordi to take her hand and come back to the ship. He gives her a big hug, and I guess they beam her up and him along with her. And that's it. Like they're gonna have to call the other Starfleet officers that are missing a loss. But
Worf is like, "Yep."
Yeah, everybody with a speaking role managed to make it through okay.
Huh.
Which is great.
They give Geordi the same cure that they gave Susanna. Geordi's feeling great about his prognosis from there.
Yeah.
How do you think this process changed Geordi?
I mean, I think that's the thing about Geordi is that he almost never experiences any change. Like,
right.
A lot of the other characters, like, I mean, you know, if Worf receives discommendation in one episode, that remains true two episodes later. But, Geordi has been through all these things where he's supposed to have, like, PTSD or, you know, his entire body has been taken over in this episode and been like mostly transformed on a genetic level. And it's like, yeah, it's like, I don't know if we will ever hear about it again.
It's really strange how Geordi gets a ton of bottle episodes and his character development also remains in the bottle.
Yeah.
He gets that short shrift in a way that I don't feel like a lot of the main characters get. The others, anyway.
Yeah. It's weird. Well, Picard promises that they're going to put some quarantine beacons on the planet, and the bottle is resealed, recorked. They dip the neck in wax to make sure that it looks like nobody has tampered with it, and they fly off for another adventure in the galaxy.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I think it's a really solid episode. There's so much to like about it. I think that we kind of have to watch this episode on its own terms, and that's hard because of Galaxy's Child.
Yeah.
But by itself, I think it's a very strong ep. I wish they did more with this. Like, I think the Susanna Leighton character is such an interesting character. I wish she could come back, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I love the idea of Geordi like mourning these friends of his that are turned into this alien forever. You know, like how does somebody in a post-scarcity futuristic utopia mourn a really strange death like that? Because they're not really dead, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what's he go through to deal with that? I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, his ability to have a healthy platonic relationship with someone makes me like Geordi a lot more.
Yeah.
For sure. This episode, it does so many good things and so many bad things. Like, this is the episode where they pull off a Predator effect really well. This is also the episode where they stick a bunch of people in like purple slim good body suits and shoot them with UV light. Like, and I feel like for a long time we've wanted practical aliens. Like, give us all the practical effects. It's so cool to see them. But like, when this is what you get, I would rather not have them, you know? I don't feel like the alien effect here is good. And that is the... That's the part that sinks it for me. I love the interpersonal stuff. I love, like, it's real terror to see a terrible fate coming, like, in slow motion. And I thought they played that part of the story really well. So I did like it with reservations.
Nice. Well, I have some lights blinking here, and there's only one thing that could mean, Adam.
Is that an ultraviolet light?
It's time to check for some Priority One messages.
Okay.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Well, fuck, that was a false alarm, Adam. Mm. Nobody bought a Priority One message for today's episode, and that means we're going to have to shut the podcast down.
Fair enough.
I'd say, well, let's call this an early warning. If you'd like to keep the podcast going, what you got to do is go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message, $200 for a commercial message. And it is an important part of how we convince our wives to let us keep doing this.
It's a critical part of a balanced breakfast. You got your toast. You got your orange juice, you got your coffee, you got your MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. I'm a little slurry. MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
There you go. You got it. You got it that time.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment, recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What is the part that we do next on the show?
I believe it is when you say, "Hey, Ben," to me.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Using a ultraviolet flashlight, were you able to find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, my Shimoda happened very close to the Jim Shimoda Memorial Corner, and it was Susanna that got the crown this time. When she collapses after kind of trying to storm out of engineering, it is one of the cheesiest takes that we have yet seen in the history of this show. It is all ham and all cheese when she, like, it's like they were like, do it like you're slipping on a banana. like that's the level of performance here. And she's like a good actor. Like, she really carries her scenes very well.
Yeah,
this
really
one moment
her.
Is just so fucking weird.
Yeah, it's almost as if she was so good throughout the episode, the director was like, you get one take. That's it. Moving on. Check the gate.
Yeah.
It felt like sabotage in a weird way, because she's so much better than that scene throughout.
Yeah. Did you find yourself a Shimoda?
I did, and it was sort of a moment Shimoda. It was a Shimoment. So at the very end, like the beat before the button, the scene before the button, probably Picard's in Six Bay. He goes up to Susanna and he's like, is there no hope for the others, Susanna? And Leighton's like, nope. Like a single word. And then they turn away from camera and walk over to Geordi in maybe 4 seconds of silence. I thought that was an incredibly hubristic amount of tying up the loose thread. Like
how many times have they gone way past the point of no hope and still pulled it out for other crewmen?
They over explain so many things on this show unnecessarily, but but that nope was like with a bullet. It was so harsh.
Yeah. Nope, they're dead.
I just loved it. It was it was cold shit.
Yeah.
And it's especially weird because Susanna was one of them, like, moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, nah, fuck him. Pretty cold.
Yeah.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 4, episode 19, The Nth Degree, when a crew member is endowed with superhuman intelligence by an alien probe. He threatens the fate of the Enterprise. Do you remember this one, Adam?
What ship is this?
I think they're talking about the Entrepreneur.
Right.
Kind of a typo.
Right, yeah.
This is the episode where lasers go into Barclay's head.
It is. It truly is. I'm excited to see this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny how we've turned dreading Barclay episodes into really relishing them. Like, I know I at one point hated this character, but I'm on board now.
Cool. Well, we don't have any veto, so even if you weren't, there's nothing you could do about it. So we will be watching it, and that will be the next ep of The Greatest Generation.
You know what makes people feel like they have lasers shooting out of their heads, Ben?
What's that, Adam?
The nice tingly feeling you get from contributing to the production of our show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah, that is a good feeling. I have some news about that, Adam.
Oh, yeah?
I put together the audio from our tour, and I think that 2 out of the 3 shows we got good tape on. So one of those is going to rise to becoming our first donor bonus episode. which will probably come out around the time of the Max Fun Drive, which will be early next year. So if you want to make sure that you are in the first scrum of people that get access to that, you're going to want to be a donor.
I listened to one of these live shows, Ben, and it was really fun to listen to because I don't remember any of it. I kind of feel like I blacked out on stage up there.
Yeah.
So it was super fun to hear us do a show with such loud responses from the audience. It was really cool.
I was really pleased with how the audio came out. We didn't, knowing not how any of this actually works, we really don't deserve the quality of tape that we got. The shows were all super fun, and I'm really excited for people to hear one of these. So unfortunately, the audio on the Seattle one, my mic was way too loud, so I sound like Jimi Hendrix's guitar the entire time. Mm. But
that's the wrong kind of clip show.
Yeah,
you're super clippy.
Nice, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, you like that.
But the other two came out really good, so we just have to pick which one we think is like the A plus of the two, and it's gonna be in that donor feed. And if you want to get in on that, go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Other ways you can support the show: leave us a nice review in iTunes. We are like pretty much there is a possibility, Adam, that we could get to 1,000 iTunes reviews on the iTunes store by the end of the year. I think that would be really cool if we got 1,000 reviews in the first calendar year of our show being a thing.
I'm just shaking my head that could ever have been a thing, but
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody that's already left one. If you're inclined to help us reach a completely insane milestone like that, we would really appreciate it. So go leave us a review. That would be awesome.
Yeah. You can talk to us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR. We've got Facebook pages and groups. We've got Reddit pages, both of which are super conversational and fun and funny.
Yeah, thank you to Dark Materia and Adam Ragusea for our music. Dark Materia made the theme. Adam Ragusea made our Priority One song. And that's just about it, I think.
Yeah, let's end the charade.
With that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a laser-brained episode of The Greatest Generation.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.